Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Paris Gourmet, delivering specialty foods and ingredients right to your restaurant, bakery, and bar. Learn more at parisgourmet.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're bringing you four stories about lost and found culinary treasures.
We are searching for what will be lost, and we're trying to rejuvenate it.
What we try to do is collect these sourdoughs that contribute to the biodiversity of sourdough in order to store them, to document them, and be able to preserve them for the future.
It's bringing back the history and just being part of that time that just, there's nothing like it. You know, there's nothing like it.
When fame comes late, I'm sure it's just as sweet as when it comes earlier.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from, hey, whatever, I'm not even going to say when I'm coming to you anymore, from a British pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Not joined with Nastasia De Hammer Lopez because she's on a plane from St. Bart's, which is a place I don't want to go because I hate paradise. I would like to go there. I'm sure they have delicious fruit and seafood.
All right, but Nastasia, I know you're going to listen to this. I didn't get a chance to tell Dave to not say where you were. She specifically told me, say where I am. It's
you're in
trouble. Can't use the word that she used, but...
What?
She's going to be mad at me. It doesn't matter.
Well, what, you didn't tell me.
I know.
Why didn't she tell me?
That's a good question.
Because she's on vacation and doesn't want to text anybody.
She's not on vacation. She doesn't want to talk about it. That I know. Anyways, she's on an airplane. She will be back next week when we have, as our special guest, Seth Godin. He's going to be talking about his books, his blog, everything else.
The marketing guy?
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah, it's going to be good. He actually used Nastasia and me in one of his posts, which was very flattering.
That's very cool. Yeah. I used to read him a lot.
Really? Yeah. Apparently.
Wait, it's a marketing guy, and he was talking about you?
No, well, so he has several books on in theory of like tribes, and he says that you, Cooking Issues crew, we together form like a tribe of
sorts. I think you're more of a cult.
I hope not. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. By the way, we've discussed this on the air. Remember, it is not... The cults don't actually drink Kool-Aid. They drink Flavor-Aid. Flavor-Aid. We've had this discussion on the air before, but it's Flavor-Aid. The Kool-Aid is, you know, from the on the bus with the acid, the electric Kool-Aid acid test. The cult drinking the Kool-Aid in a cult way. And by the way, like, how is it that... I'm not going to get into it because we've... Matt in the booth, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
We had this discussion like several weeks ago, right?
Yeah, no, and it's a huge PR win for Kool-Aid, I think.
We didn't kill the people. It was
the
Flavor-Aid
people.
They're the worst, and they were a knockoff to begin with, the weasels.
Nobody remembers Flavor-Aid now, though, so.
I know, but like, first of all, like, how cheap are those guys at Jonestown?
It's not like you're going to need money after this. Just get the good punch.
That's so wrong. That's Jack Schramm. I was told last week when he came on that I did wasn't enthusiastic enough, so hopefully that wasn't enthusiastic. He's the head bartender of Existing Conditions, and we should have, if Nastasia's the hammer, you should maybe, what tool would you be? Some sort of knife?
No, that makes me the nail.
I was like, Jack the Nail Schramm, right? Like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. And I don't know why she's here, but our other special guest in the studio today is Kat from the Heritage Radio Network, who you're also the host of which You're like, what do you like? What is everything you do for the Heritage Radio Network?
Everything I do. I am the communications director. That's what I spend most of my time doing. I also.
So you're Sarah Huckabee Sanders of Heritage Radio Network?
Oh, why would Correct. You say that about me?
Cat Huckasans.
Oh, boy.
Non-political show. I take it back. We're not talking
Thank
about
you.
It.
I also co-host Meet in Three, which is the trailer you hear at the beginning of the show.
Now, do you spell that with an A or with an E?
With an A. Meet in Three, as in the southern Meet in Three sides meal that you would get at like a country restaurant.
Yeah.
And that's the format of the show. We have one meat story that's like longer
Aren't
than three sides.
Are you from
sides.
Like Mobile or something crazy like this?
I'm from the other side of Alabama.
All right.
Near Georgia.
Okay.
And then I also co-host HR and Happy Hour, which you guys should come be on sometime. It's on Thursdays at 5 p.m. And
that we're opening a bar right then.
Well, I know, but you know, if someone will write you a tardy slip, you can come hang out.
I got an idea. Why don't you record it once from existing conditions and we'll serve you drinks?
We would yes. love to
yes.
do that.
Ooh. Let's do that.
That's what I wanted to talk to yes. you about later.
Can we do it on a non-Thursday day?
What about a Friday earlier in the afternoon?
That sounds great.
Love it.
Boom.
That's a little tease coming up. We're going to do Summer Fridays happy
Ooh.
Hour.
Ooh.
Nice. But so, Kat, what do you hear? Oh, by the way, call in.
Your by the way is perfectly timed. We have a person on the air.
Hello, person. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Sorry, the connection's a little bit patchy. Has the question about fermenting sausages and sous vide been definitively answered? Because I have my own experiences to report on that.
Has it been definitively answered? So, in general, right? I mean, look, I don't know. Like, give me the particular question. I don't know whether I've answered. I'm always kind of loath to talk about things that are relative to safety. But assuming that you have, I mean, you're trying to get a pH drop relatively quickly, so it should work in a sous vide thing. It's just a question of whether or not it's possible to have crap grow in it in the meantime, right? Which presumably why you have salt and nitrites there as well. But what were you going to say?
Yeah, so I've done it a number of times now with what I would deem to be successful results in terms of flavor and not getting sick. That's just something I wanted to report out. Specifically, I was making summer sausage using the SafePro FLC culture.
Right.
And once they were cased up in their fibrous casings and then vac bagged and then put in a sous vide bath, I used 90 degrees for about 30 to 36 hours. There was no ill effects to report. So it seems like an alternative that would work, but I would give that same disclaimer as well about health-related issues.
I would love to get, Johnny Hunter on, because the reason I pick him is because, I know he went through a whole Kickstarter thing on getting his HACCP stuff done, so he might have some more to weigh in on this, on the technical side.
Sure.
But, I mean, look at the... Let's say you're a standard person, like any of us, right? You're packing the sausages into casings. They can be relatively large, right? And then you're doing it traditionally. You're hanging it in a hot, moist box, for however long it takes to get the pH drop you need with the culture you have, right? I mean, that's what we're doing. So
yes.
In reality, in the real life, right, the interior of that sausage is, pretty quickly goes into an anaerobic condition and therefore should be growing botulism, right? I mean, if it was going to grow at all, it should be growing, right? I mean, that's the theory. That's why botulism is called botulism after the Latin word for whatever it is. Like, you're a food history guy, Jack. Sausage, right? Botulism, isn't it? Someone look it up, the Latin for sausage. Okay. Anyways, point being that the only difference here is that you're immediately putting the entire thing in an anaerobic environment, including the outside. But it's not like the air is getting to the inside of that freaking sausage during the time that the pH is going down. So in general, if the interior of the sausage is going to be safe, I would say the exterior of the sausage is probably safe. Inside of a bag, with the caveat that I wouldn't put it in a hard vacuum. The Latin is farciminius. That just means stuff.
But if you keep going, botulus, casing, sausage.
Oh, botulus, casing, sausage. Come on, Jack.
Whoa, listen. Don't blame me, blame Google.
Blame NYU. That's who educated Jack.
Nobody looks beyond the first result.
Yeah, what amazed me was that once I cut it open the packages after the fermentation period, they remained tight, and there was no, even hint of any bad smell, at least to me.
Right.
It
well,
smelled
I mean,
absolutely delicious and got better when it was smoked.
I mean, it should be, look, theoretically, in my mind, it's kind of an ideal environment, right? Because you're not letting other stuff go on it, and you can control the temperature extremely accurately, and you're not getting any dry down at all. You don't have to worry about the relative humidity or any of that. To me, mentally, it's ideal. It's just I hesitate to say, without having someone done the HACCP work on it, to say that you're totes 100 safe on it. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
Yeah, but mentally, it's a great idea. I mean, look at it this way also is, you know, when we make sauerkraut, right, we salt the bejesus out of the product, and you put it in a vac bag, and it starts going with its lactic acid, you know, McGillicuddy there, and it turns into delicious stuff, and I never worry about it even once. You know what I mean?
Now,
so
with the salting you're talking about for the sauerkraut, I'll just usually go for a 2% by weight and then fill in with 2% brine as necessary if there's a little too much airspace.
Yeah.
What level of salt do you prefer? I'm just curious.
I got to be honest, and this is just proves what kind of a jerk I am. I literally just... I should measure it someday. I literally just toss and taste. I'm like a really bad guy. You know what I mean? It's like, but because I have kind of because I am a salty man and I have a salty palate, I'm never, ever in danger of undersalting it. You know what I mean? I know a lot of people are trying to push the edge. I've heard like 2% by weight, and I like the idea of adding brine. I think that's a mistake people make. They don't kind of add in a little bit of brine, and it's always good. And if let's say you've never made sauerkraut before, right? I think a good idea is to buy some commercially made, unpasteurized, untreated sauerkraut. By the way, if anyone is listening to this who has never had real unpasteurized, like still alive fermented sauerkraut, wow, you shouldn't do anything else other than go get that stuff right now.
It's so good.
If you've just had the sterilized, pasteurized sauerkraut that you get in the average supermarket that comes in a polyethylene bag, and you're like, I don't like sauerkraut. Well,
you don't like baseball game hot dog sauerkraut, which also makes you a bad person because delicious, just different.
Well, it's not actually delicious. It's fine on a hot dog.
It's a great condiment.
It's not. Have you ever eaten it by itself? Have you ever just sat down and tried to take down a whole bowl of soubrette pasteurized sauerkraut?
Have you ever eaten a bowl of yellow mustard?
Yes.
I'm talking to the wrong person.
Yes, you are, Jack.
I'm
on your team, Jack.
Don't forget, I used to take bets, food bets, one of which was I've taken down dining hall size things of yellow mustard.
Just
I've taken down
woof.
Well, no, they're not that fancy. Yellow.
Just yellow.
Yellow.
Yellow brand mustard.
And I have to say something about this. Zenf, which is mustard auf Deutsch. Zenf snobs. I like yellow mustard.
I love yellow mustard. I'm just saying.
I actually believe it's a good product.
So do I. I also believe that, yeah.
I like a spicy brown mustard.
I like all mustards.
I hate to say this because, you know, maybe, I don't know, they're never going to hand me money anyway. It doesn't matter. But I do not like the standard mass produced Dijon mustard. I've said it on the air a million times.
On behalf of HRN, if any Dijon mustard brands want to give us money, we love you.
I love that product.
We love it.
We can change Dave's mind.
Yeah.
Do you hate white wine?
We'll dub over.
I don't hate white wine. It's just, I've never had one that I didn't think was, and this is one of Jack's favorite words, kind of acrid. Like, I just don't, like, especially the one that's got the gray poop on it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Oh, so good.
I don't like it. Oof. I love the commercials. I love the Rolls Royces. You know, okay. I like poking fun at rich folk, but, you know, I just, it's not my thing.
What about honey mustard?
Honey mustard's a product. I think it exists.
He's got you there. It is a product.
Whoa.
Okay, I'm going to go back to my 1970s roots. If you're going to buy an incredibly substandard, and I hate to even use this word here, brie, right?
Yeah.
Right. Ooh. Right. Listen, because the stuff that we call brie here in the United States, taint brie.
Taint brie.
It's trash cheese.
Mm.
However, it doesn't taste bad.
No, God,
no. It's a good texture, and it's kind of a neutral substrate.
Yeah, it's like ballpark sauerkraut.
No, it's not, because ballpark sauerkraut tastes flawed because of the preservatives in it. It's flawed. It tastes flawed. regular garbage brie is like the closest thing to a neutral unit of cheese that you can get. Mm-hmm. Like more neutral than like it's like on the Colby level of neutral.
It's like the brick.
It's like cream cheese almost.
The brick in the La Bernardin kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The so, palate neutral.
Yeah, the palate neutral piece of Swiss, Kraft Swiss, but it's not texturally neutral, right? Like cream cheese. So brie. So in other words, it actually is good to put on croûte and bake that sucker with like and that cat. Is the application for honey mustard is a 70s baked brie.
Love it. But also in pastry, like if you bake brie in a pastry, I like that.
Yeah, yeah,
you said on croûte.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not that fancy, you
guys.
Come on.
Gosh.
We have a different caller who's been waiting for like five mustards.
All right, geez, mustards. All right, caller, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Dave? Everybody. Congratulations on Matt on being the first one on time today.
Oh, snap! Snap.
He's already here.
Is he?
Yeah, he's already here.
Hey, I showed up at 10 today. For this
imagine.
Show.
So I have two questions, Dave.
All right.
The first one is about low temping steaks. I have 2-inch New York strip steak.
Okay.
And I was wondering how long to cook them for and the temperature. And then the second question would be how to sear them in a pan with the mayonnaise.
Oh, so see, I actually, you know what? That'd probably be good. I like, Kat's giving me a look. Putting mayonnaise on everything before you sear it.
Delicious.
No, I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
But which mayonnaise? Dukes.
Oh, come on, man. I have a thing of Dukes in my, I've never had Dukes.
It's the best.
I have a container of it in my house that is as yet unopened because.
It's very good.
Because FIFO.
Yeah. You gotta get through the mayo first.
I'm going to answer this. I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to answer your question, but. Wait, what did Kanye say on stage? I'm going to give you your time.
I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah, I'm going to give you your time. Anyway, but what is it about Duke's that's so freaking tasty?
It's got a tangy zip.
So does Miracle Whip. It's not even mayonnaise.
Yeah, I know. No, it's just like...
But it's fatty with the tangy zip. It's like the perfect
balance.
Of
course it's fatty. It's mayonnaise.
But you're saying Miracle Whip, which does is not. And does
Miracle Whip is fatty.
It exists in like on the spectrum in between... Your classic Hellman's and QP. It's not full QP.
So you're saying it's sugar. You're saying they put sugar in it.
It's Southern.
QP is good because they put sugar in it. Let's just be honest. Let's call a QP a QP. QP is good on account of the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
QP's amazing.
Also, you want to hear another thing why I'm a garbage person? I love to buy pre-flavored mayonnaises. Here's some pre-flavored mayonnaises I like. I like sriracha mayonnaise.
Hey.
You purchased that?
You know what?
Sorry, family
stuff,
show.
Stuff.
You can say things. That here. It's fine.
And also, here's I got such a hate down on this from Wiley and Dave Chang. I like wasabi mayonnaise. I'm going to go ahead and say it. That stuff tastes good on French fries. Anyway, now back to the question. Wasabi, look.
It tastes good, but just
Dave Chang
make it yourself.
Almost punched me in the face when I told him this. I like, and you ready for this? And this... Anyone who's like Jack age and younger will not care about this. But anyone like my age, within 6 years of my age, hates this idea on a number of fronts, but not on taste. Wasabi mashed potatoes taste good.
Did that have like a cultural moment?
Yeah,
that's never crossed my mind.
It was culturally hated by all the chefs.
Huh.
Okay.
I literally almost got.
Was it like a thing in restaurants?
He had to stop himself from punching me.
The good old days.
Yeah. Anyway. And
what
Wiley
kind of restaurants was this?
You also remember back in the day, Wiley and Dave Chang, we used to get in, like, I wouldn't say knockdown, drag out fights because they never knocked me down and dragged me out of the room, but they wanted to on tongs because both of them are very anti-tong.
Okay.
Very anti-tong. We could talk about this later. Let's talk about steaks now. So 2-inch strip steaks. 2-inch is a good call because you're not going to overcook the inside. Now, like strip, but strip is problematic on this note. If you pre-salt strip, it gets kind of real. It gets real firm if you're going to do a cook chill. I'm currently running the tests on whether or not it's the chilling in salt that makes it after you cook it. The chilling in salt that makes it firm up. Whereas if you just never chill it and you add the salt, it's going to firm up. But I know if you cook it, then chill it with salt over a long period of time, it's going to firm up. If you're going to serve the steak within I'd say 4 hours or so of the minute you throw it into the bath, 4 or 5 hours when you throw it into the bath, then you can go ahead and salt it beforehand because it's not going to have time to cure through. I would take your steak, and you can pre-sear it or not. The issue on pre-searing is it does help develop a faster crust after you do it. It's not strictly speaking necessary. It does add another step. In my tests, as long as you don't overcook it afterwards, pre-searing is good, right? So the way that other people do it who don't pre-sear is they just sear it longer afterwards. So all the people who say, I'm looking at all you idiots, you know who you are, who are like, pre-searing beforehand, it doesn't make any difference. Well, it's because you're not paying freaking attention. It takes longer to sear something afterwards if you haven't pre-seared it. And if you sear it for a long time afterwards, you're in danger of ruining all the good work you've done with low temperature. You're not 100% going to do it, but it just makes it more likely. Anyways, so that said, I don't always pre-sear because I am, and we all know this, intensely lazy. Okay, so you have a 2-inch thick steak, which again is a good call. What I would do is I'd put it in the bag with oil, and you know, I don't really worry anymore about the oil I'm using unless I'm going to take said liquid and make it into garlic bread later, in which case I exclusively use butter. But if you are, you know, I don't think that the butter necessarily makes the steak that much better, but the butter becomes good. You know what I'm saying? Okay. If you're going to put the butter on bread. Anyways, so then you get it in there with enough oil such that you can do, or butter, whatever, so you can do the Ziploc. I also always, and I know Ferran Adria is like, you know, everyone needs salt, but pepper's a spice, you idiots. Don't put pepper on the table. Well, with steak and pepper, they be friends.
Delicious.
They're super friends. So I pepper the hell out of them. I'm just to let you know what I do. Any other notes I have? If it's dry aged, I would cut off the outer layer of fat and the bone. If you want the entire thing to taste kind of stinky, like on the bone dry age, like my man Jack here does, then leave it in. Otherwise, dry age flavor tends to permeate the rest of the stiznak while you're cooking. So I would trim away some of the more dry agey parts if you got some squeamishy people in the sitch, right? You with me? All right. So you have you have the thing, and remember, here's another thing people make the mistake. Make sure that all of your steaks are only one layer thick, right? So like if you're putting things in bags and then the bags are stacked on top of each other and water can't get through them, they might as well be one piece of meat, right? So and it will take forever. Because remember, as you increase the thickness of your product by a factor of 2, you increase the cooking time by a factor of 4, right? So it goes by the square. It goes by the square of the distance. So already at 2 inches, you're at a relatively thick. So now, I know it's taking me a long time. So put the steak into your bath, right? You know, make sure the sucker's sealed. You don't want water to get in because then you're going to be crying bitter tears. But I would do it at somewhere between 55 Celsius and 55.2 or 3 Celsius, like in that range, right? And I would leave it there for at least an hour and a half. All right? At least an hour and a half, right? Now, here's where you're going to skirt the line. Now, I would drop it. I would drop the bath to depending on how much you like to skirt the laws of bacteria, right? Between 52 and 53 degrees Celsius. I do 52, right? And then let her ride for again, depends on how squeamish you are, but like you could do up to 4 hours. You could do even longer. But like a little bit, and that's your tenderization phase. If you keep that steak at 55, so 55 is a nice number for that steak, but if you keep it at 55 for a long, long, long time, here's the thing. The meat will start to firm up more. So it won't happen instantly, but gradually it's going to get firmer and firmer at 55, right? So what you really want to do in the real life, and this is the same way with eggs. When you cook an egg, right, you get it up to the temperature you want, and then you pull it back by a degree or two so that it doesn't keep traveling up a little bit. So like if you keep it at 55 and you run it for 6 hours, it's going to feel It's going to feel texture-wise closer to a 56 or a 57. So what you want to do is bring her up to 55, drop her back to 50, 52, 53, and then you can ride it for a long time to get the texture where you want it, depending on the particular texture and the grade of the steak that you have, right? But like 4 or 5 hours, nice, right? A little bit long. Then, before I sear it, now, 52 might be fine for where you are, but even like a couple of minutes, a little bit at 50, or pulling it out a little bit and letting it rest a little bit, so that when you sear it, you're not taking the inside. But thankfully, since you have a 2-inch steak, it's not going to travel that much up in the interior, especially if you've had a good long soak at like 52, 53. You're going to have a little bit of a wiggle room on a 2-inch steak to sear it up. And I would do, hey, slather that sucker, put it on the hottest thing you own. What's the hottest thing you own? Do you own the sun? Because if you own the sun, you can put it on the surface of the sun, get a nice crisp surface on it, and you're better off doing like a series of two intensely hot sears than you like wah off wah like that to get the sear that you want on it, because that's going to produce a better crust than sitting there with a punier heat source and having it take a lot longer. Just saying. Hmm. Yeah.
Got you. I'll do a cast iron.
Yeah. All right. You're good.
This episode is brought to you by Paris Gourmet, a leading specialty food importer and distributor servicing the New York tri-state area and beyond from coast to coast. I'm Jordan Werner Berry, the host of Modernist Breadcrumbs here on HRN. When it comes to freshly baked artisan bread, it's key to pair it with butter that's made with the same amount of care and attention. And you don't have to go all the way to France to find truly amazing butter. Bourmont 83% is an American butter made using traditional French methods. It's produced by a dairy cooperative in New England. And as a Vermont native, I love that this delicious butter is made locally by family farms. Bourmont 83% is great for cooking, baking, and serving on your table with fresh breads and artisan cheeses. It's proudly distributed by Paris Gourmet to restaurants and grocery stores around the tri-state area. Learn more about Paris Gourmet and all of their gourmet savory foods and pastry ingredients at parisgourmet.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Andrew Friedman, and I'm the host of Andrew Talks to Chefs here on HRN. Every week, I interview a diverse cross-section of the best and biggest names in professional cooking. Give a listen and get to know all about the inner lives of chefs. You can find Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
By the way, I forget who was sent it to me, but we said this on the air a couple of times, that I feel that what's going to happen in the future is we're going to be a lot more worried about indoor air quality. And I think it was the New York Times published an article recently. Someone did, I think it was maybe my wife Jen, who, cause, you know, she's hip to this because she's an architect. But I think she sent me the article. But they're doing now a bunch of research on indoor volatiles in Western standard kitchens, cooking things like Thanksgiving. And guess what, folks? Taint pretty. But that said, So basically, they're saying, look, they have an analyzer, a particle size analyzer. So they're analyzing the size of like the smoke, fume, grease, and other particles that we're making in the kitchen. And then they're likening it to other small particles that they think are harmful, like the crap that comes out of your exhaust pipe, or like if you was a smoker. And they're trying to like figure it out. But no one, I think, has, because how the heck are you going to, I don't think anyone's asked people with lung cancer, so you use cook a lot?
How many steaks you cook per week per in your kitchen?
Yeah. And, you know, funny to say it, but, you know, professional kitchens, by and large, when you go into a professional kitchen, they're more neutral smelling than they should be, considering how much. And it's because we have good hoods.
Great hoods.
You know what I mean?
Why don't apartments in New York have ventilation? Like,
because there aren't any laws.
It's awful.
There are no laws. Like, there's no one that says you have to have good ventilation. There's laws that say that you have to have a certain amount of, like, quote-unquote light, right? So your window can back up on somebody else, but every room's got a window.
Yeah.
Every room's got a minimum size. You know, you have to have a certain number of exits so that you don't burn up. You know, you need to have your smoke detectors. but nobody cares. And maybe it's because nobody cooks anymore. Maybe it's because nobody cooks anymore. And like, you know, that that thing with the grates is where you keep your plates. You know what I mean? That's the oven, people. But like, you know, ventilation is so crappy. It's so crappy. And I know for a fact, because I spoke to people, when they're building buildings, no one's thinking, I wonder how I'm going to extract all of this here kitchen smell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or smoke. Back in the old days, like when, you know, rich folk lived in big apartments and other people cooked for them, the kitchens were far away because no one wanted to be exposed to the smell. We all want to be exposed to the smell now because it smells good.
Smells great.
Smells good. But on the other hand, like, how many of you out there cook on the regular and notice that all the surfaces of your kitchen are coated in filth?
Yup.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Like, I need, if anyone out there knows like a good defilthener, because I don't want to get up on the ceiling with a scrubby and get the polymerized, you know, grease off of the... See, it's hard enough to get the polymerized grease off of my pans, which I hang on the ceiling, because I feel if a pan is in a cupboard underneath another pan, I'm just going to leave. Like,
if you can't reach for it,
yeah.
It
here's another
exist.
Rule: here, if you can't pick it up without undoing, if it takes you 5 minutes to get your pan, you're not going to use it on the regular, right? Here's another thing: I've said this a million times, I'll say it one more time. I want you guys to listen because people still make this mistake. Please listen. If you wrap a piece of food in aluminum foil, unless you're cooking it right now in aluminum foil, throw it away. As soon as a piece of food is wrapped in aluminum foil and put back in the fridge, it's garbage. In my house, anyway, because I can't see it anymore. I don't know what the hell it is. Throw it away. You know what I mean? Like, just throw it away, you know? And if you put something in a package in the freezer and it's not clearly labeled, please, save yourself the trouble. Throw it away. This way, when someone shows up with an ice cream cake, you won't have to then rummage through your freezer, find all the stuff that you're like, I don't know what this is or when it's from, and then throw it away. Just throw it away now. Just admit to yourself that it's garbage and throw it away. You know what I'm saying? I hate seeing things wrapped in aluminum foil in my fridge, right? And yeah. I'm not saying that plastic... I'm not saying we should all use polyethylene and you know, until we've, you know, sucked the last, like, liquefied dinosaur out of the ground. But... Right? Like, there is an advantage to being able to see the crap in your fridge.
Yeah, I just want to exist in your universe where people just show up with ice cream cakes.
It happens so much.
Fudgy the Whale?
No, listen. Oh, I wish. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Tom Carvel, I love you so much. Anyway, I mean, maybe he was a bad man. I don't know. Like, you know, I'm kind of glad that we don't know a lot about some of our childhood heroes, that there was no social media. For all I know, Tom Carvel... For those of you that don't live in the Northeast, didn't grow up here, Tom Carvel was the owner and person who came up with Carvel ice cream. Carvel ice cream is fantastic. If you don't like Carvel ice cream, you're wrong. Like, it's just delicious. And I can say that because I grew up eating it. Like, is it the highest quality? Is it like, you know, my man Morgenstern who's here for? No, it's not. It's not. But.
Delicious.
Delicious. And people also make the error. Mistake of believing that just because something is soft serve, that it is a high overrun product. People, get straight the difference between the textural effects of temperature and the textural effects of pumping a crap ton of air into your ice cream, because they are different. You can tell when you hold, now they might have changed it since I was a kid. It's been a long time since I've had Carvel. But it used to be when someone handed you a cup of Carvel ice cream, or if you picked up Fudgy the Whale or a Carvel ice cream cake, you were like, dang, that's hefty. That is a hefty. Yeah. That is a hefty hunk of ice cream.
I think it still is.
Dance.
Where have any of you out there ever run a soft serve machine? Have you? Have you guys ever? You have.
I worked
Jack.
At Milk Bar.
You worked
yeah.
at Milk Bar. So here's a little secret for you. So what happens is that in the average soft serve machine, there's a cylinder and there's a pump, and that there's a little, like, it's a little kind of plastic pump, and it goes and it pumps the. You know what I'm talking about, Jack?
Yeah.
It pumps the ice cream base. Pre-chilled ice cream base into the freezing cylinder, right? Now, the manufacturer has an orifice on that, and it's with this orifice that they choose how much air they pump into the cylinder at the same time they're pumping the base in. And so unscrupulous ice cream truck owners or soft serve machine owners can swap out the orifice to increase the overrun. Overrun, by the way, overrun is the technical term for how much air you're putting into an ice cream base. So 100% overrun doesn't mean that 100% of the ice cream is air. It means that if you had 100 grams of ice cream base, you will add 100 milliliters of ice cream base, you will add 100 milliliters of air to that ice cream base. So you're doubling the volume. So an ice cream with 100% overrun is double the volume of its base. All right. So they can do like, they can do like buck 15, buck 20. So like some of these unscrupulous operators will put in an orifice in their soft serve machines to jack the air into the cylinder. And if you walk up to one of these people and you get an ice cream cone and it feels like you're holding a helium balloon in your hand instead of an ice cream cone, watch, walk over, and I'm not advocating violence, but punch them in the face. but where do we get to this from? Where were we talking about? We're talking
It's been a long road.
Steaks.
Steaks and ice cream.
By the way, I'm also not a guy who feels that like you can't have ice cream and then immediately go eat a steak.
You're okay with that?
I'm 100% okay with that. Why would I not be okay?
Thank
ice cream
God.
Is delicious.
Yeah.
Steak is delicious. Now, what I don't like to do is eat a bunch of ice cream and then pound a liter and a half of seltzer. What you should do, is you should drink the seltzer first and then the ice cream.
Why?
By the way, when you were a child, Kat, were you very upset by this? Did you drink soda growing up?
I did.
Okay.
Mostly sweet tea, though, but some soda.
Oh, I hate sweet tea so much.
Whoa.
Oh, my God. I hate it so much.
All right, let's not go down that road.
I like tea.
Soda.
I like sweet. Remember the first time, Jack, Matt, wait on this. Do you remember the first time you realized that your... This is the first time I realized that my mouth was not a perfect predictor, right? That, like, what went into my face was conditioned by what had just gone into my face. I remember eating a bunch of ice cream.
Okay.
I was a small child. And then pounding the soda and not just because my stomach was inflating, but not being refreshed because the soda tasted warm relative to what soda was supposed to taste like because my mouth had been chilled by the ice cream. And I remember intense disappointment, like intense disappointment. And I was like, Mom, what the hell? You know what I mean? And she was like, well, if you eat something that's really cold, then the cold but still relatively warm liquids that you're pouring in your mouth won't be as refreshing. And I was just, and from that point, I don't drink liquids after like ice cream for like a couple of minutes. It's such a disappointment to not be refreshed.
Well, the mistake
a hot liquid.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, the mistake is to not just make a Coke float.
Well, so Jack and I were going to make a drink at the bar.
Let's not talk about it until it's ready.
Okay, but then, of course, here's what I hate. Every flavor combination has been come up with by someone at some point, right?
Yeah.
With the exception of, like, I don't know. I won't get into it. But, like, so Jack and I are going to do this thing at the bar, and then Bobby's like...
It's already a thing.
It's already a thing. It's called like a Denver poop shoot. I forget what the heck the name was that he said it was.
I don't know. Alabama liquid snake or something.
I don't know what it was. But I was like, Bobby, you know, on the one hand, it's very... You need people like that around you at all times because...
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to, what you don't want is you don't want a guest to come in and be like, this is just like a Denver poop shoot or whatever it was because an Alabama
snake. No, we have improved it.
No, but
it's our take on.
You don't want to be caught unawares.
Yeah.
You want to know. And this is the problem. This is why when you're in this business, you shouldn't fall behind too much because if you fall behind, then people can come in. And if you don't have a, like a bam back in their face when they give you the poop shoot argument.
Then they think you're a jamoke.
Then they think you're a freaking jamoke.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm.
Can't be caught as a jamoke.
You can't.
All right, let me answer an actual freaking question.
Can't exist in a vacuum.
I know we're late, but Kat, before Matt kicks us off the air, why are you in our studio today? What are you promoting?
I just wanted to hang out, but.
That's a lie.
But. We are going to have this event coming up on April 26th.
I just want to hang out,
but if you're going to give me the time, we're doing an agave.
You took the time.
I'm reclaiming this time. We're having a rare agave tasting on April 26th at
the agave 6:30. Or the liquid that they make from agave.
Agave spirits. Okay. It's called So You Think You Know Mezcal.
I bet you Jack does. Quiz him.
I do.
I don't know how to quiz you. You know more than me.
All right, I'll give you. What are we going to give her? I'll give you the. Whatever. I'll give her a free drink.
Yeah.
All right. Name the agave variety most popular, because I'm sure there's more than five, but name the most popular right now in the bar world agave variety that grows where the piña grows on a stalk. On a stalk. Stalk.
This isn't the one that was, that's like on a mountain, right?
Ding, ding.
Is it
ding,
on a mountain? Ding,
ding. They're all on a freaking mountain.
Oh, I don't know.
Ding. It's not
the one that you're thinking of is Tobala.
Ding, ding.
Yeah,
ding,
I'm not going to know this. Ding.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Madre Quiche.
Madre Quiche. The mother of the Quiche. Is that like, what does Madre Quiche mean anyway?
I believe it means mother of the Quiche.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. And we have a drink with Madre Quiche on it at Existing Conditions. Well, with that varietal. And it's got the funniest name of any mezcal. It's real expensive, real delicious. El Holgorio.
Really fantastic producer of mezcals. Incredible product.
Awesome.
Drink it.
If you have the money.
So this event is going to be with a guy named Lou Bank, who goes down and gets like rare agave spirits and brings them back. They're ones you can't really get stateside. He's going to have five different ones. So come check out that
will
event.
Will they all be mezcal, or will it they be will Sotol not, and yes, Ricea? And okay.
He brings a little bit of everything, and we never Ricea really know did. What he's bringing. He just got back from Oaxaca last week. So yep, go to our Facebook page for tickets.
Ding, 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 ding.
Thank you.
Where is this event occurring?
At 100 Bogart down the street from the studio.
What day of the week is it?
It's a Friday.
Can you move that?
No, but I...
For me?
But do you want Lou to come by the bar and hang out with you guys?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll set that up with you.
And also, I thought we were going to get Schroeder on this freaking show to talk about it.
He's coming in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yep. And maybe Lou will come too, because they're going to be here at the same time. They went to Oaxaca together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, let's get them here. Fight!
I am calling it now. I will be here for that episode.
Yay!
Well, can you be the guy who... What's that guy's name who stands in the back and says, "Get over here!"
Scorpion?
Is that his name?
The Mortal Kombat character?
Get over here!
Scorpion, yeah.
You can be that guy?
Yeah.
And then you're going to have them fight?
Well, I would be fighting if...
They're on a team, so yeah.
Okay.
Wait. So in Tekken, what's the name of the person who says, "Hihachi Mishima wins"? That's a different game.
It's like it's just the announcer.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
He's good. You don't like Tekken, though.
It's not my favorite fighting game.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Can we propose Jack the Scorpion Shram for the future?
The Scorpion or the Nail?
No, we can't because I already wrote the Nail on social media.
Get over here. Right.
That's pretty good. Matt, what's your favorite fighting game?
And why is it Street Fighter?
I didn't play very many Spider. I was a shooter guy. House of the Dead.
Now you're creeping me out. You're not willing to go and punch someone in the face. You have to shoot them from far away.
Correct.
Weak.
Weak.
Can't even throw a fireball.
Marcel wrote in and said, "I tried making an aioli with Marcel. You probably don't speak this way. I tried making an aioli with wild garlic tops. Basically, they look like chives. You know, when I was a kid, and I hear some of these are poisonous, I used to run around and rip up the tall grass that smells like onions, and I would chew on that stuff. Nah, it's because I'm stupid.
Okay.
But it's not green enough or strong enough in flavor. I'm worried I lost flavor when I blanched them. What is the best way to make an aioli with them that will be very garlicky and green while emulsifying the chives into the, chive-alikes? Into the aioli, prevent oxidation on its own right, or do I need to blanch or blend alcohol? First of all, most of these kind of green, garlicky things, they're going to stay green whether you blanch them or not. I would not blanch them. If you blanch them, you are nuking the... Look. When you're taking an allium, right, and you are... They don't develop any flavor until they's cut, right? They develop no flavor until they's cut, because it's an enzymatic reaction, right? Which is why anyone who takes an actual kind of chive and then gives you long, like, sticks of it, like they're friggin' toothpicks, not only are they committing a crime against your teeth and texture, but they're also not producing enough flavor out of the chive. This is why God wants you to take the chives and cut them into very thin, tiny little discs. And you're supposed to do a good job of it, not have a wet knife, not have a wet freaking board, and not make a pasty freaking mess of your chives. This is the reason that chives evolved, for you to do that to them. Now,
stop committing tooth crime.
Yes. Anyway, so then what happens is that it's the cutting into the tiny discs that's actually making the flavor that we associate with those chives. So by blanching them whole, you are not allowing that flavor to develop. Now, there is some research that if you blanch them, blend them, and then add raw allium to it that contains its own enzyme. Let's say, I don't know, white onion, right? That the enzymes that are in the white onion will bloom the precursor flavors that are in the blanched chive and bring it back. So one solution, if you're actually having it not be, if it's actually turning on you color-wise, would be to blanch them and then blend them with raw white onion. And then that should whoo-bang, like, bloom that stuff out. Maybe not to its 100% where it would be before, but it's still going to bloom it out. The other thing is, I would just try raw. How long are you trying to keep this stuff? Like, you trying to keep it for the rest of your natural life? Or you're trying to keep it for a day or two? In my experience, like, the green in that stuff's not going to go bad as fast as, let's say, mint. Or you know, mint's the worst. I mean, mint tastes great. Like, mint is one of those things that, like, that... Mint's one of those things that just sits there in the corner and taunts you, the same way that lime does. You know what I mean? Trying to keep lime, trying to keep mint. You know what I'm saying?
Do you use mint at existing conditions?
Right now?
Yeah.
Or in life?
In life, like, would you?
So Jack and I, for years, Jack and I have been making, as a one-off, the world's greatest grasshopper.
Oh, it's so good.
And then...
Oh, no, we've said this on the air.
I'm not going to tell people how we do it yet. Not until we have it on. But,
no, but they're going to come and ask for it now.
No, but the point is that...
Guys, don't bother Jack.
Point is, and Bobby Murphy has brought in... What's the name of that new vodka that tastes like chocolate, but it's made from rye?
Oh, it's the it's a single malt vodka from... Where is it from? Scotland?
I thought it was from rye. I thought it was made out of rye. It's barley? Whatever.
Like the whole thing is...
Stuff tastes like chocolate.
It's good. It's very good.
So, point being that, like, we have the technology, not just the technology, the skill and the palate to make, like, honestly, like, I would actually drink it. Now, to get me to drink a bunch of creamy drinks, like, you have to give me some drugs or something, like, because I just don't order that. I, like, that's not the style of drink that I order when I'm ordering drinks. But this grasshopper is... Banana Lemon Ding Dong. It's so good. But why have we never put it on the menu? Is it just because we are bad people?
The combination of nitro muddle and cream is...
Don't tell people how to do it.
They don't know yet.
As soon as we have it, we will...
We also have to source a high-quality grading chocolate. That doesn't exist at the bar right now. Yeah. So we can't make it. We cannot make this
high-quality
right
grading
now.
Chocolate, a.k.a. But Valrhona.
Yeah. Is the mint, like, are you using fresh mint to garnish, or is it like a syrup?
Come on, man.
You know we don't garnish. Please, nitro
so
muddle. Nitro muddle.
Okay.
As I say to my children on the regular.
Oh boy.
Slap yourself.
Oh boy.
I'm not going to hit them. You know what I mean? Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know.
You just did.
Did we answer Sid's barbecue question last week, Jeff?
There's another caller on the air.
All right, one more caller, and then we'll get ripped off. Then someone, hey, Sid. I can't remember whether I answered your question. Tell Nastasia that I need to answer it. Same goes with Isabel in Vancouver with the Canadian-Italian cocktails. Did we answer that one last week?
Yes.
Okay. All right, what's the caller? We'll take this last caller, and then Matt's going to rip us off the airwaves here.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
All right, what's up?
Quick question. Last week, you and Jack were both on, and limoncello came up, and you guys kind of made a face.
Yeah.
So I was curious.
How could you see? How could you see?
I have questions. Like, where are you?
Can you see through sound?
An audible face, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Full stop.
Fair. Yeah. I hear you. It just seemed like you had some particular beef. And on that note, for your celebrity alcohol tasting, Danny DeVito has his own brand of limoncello.
I will get him in here. Look, it's not that I think it's... Jack, do you like limoncello?
I have had examples that are fine.
Look. Here it is.
You know what's good about lemons? Acid. You know what limoncello doesn't have? Acid.
Yeah. Look.
Oh, good point.
Look, it tastes a bit like detergent to me. Like very, very sweet detergent.
Yeah.
Now, it's not flawed. It tastes exactly like it's supposed to taste. It's just, in general, that's not the taste I want. Now, I did a, for Pellini, limoncello, I did a Tales of the Cocktail seminar.
That drink was delicious. Because we mounted it with salty preserved lemon and made one of the best beverages of all time.
Correct. So the issue is that if I want that lemony flavor, see, the people who make limoncello, here's what they wake up with. I had have this neutral grain spirit, and I got so many lemons. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I don't have this issue, right? So, like, I'm going to pay someone who's got a surfeit of lemons to make a very sweet thing, whereas if I want a lemon flavor at the bar, I own lemon peels. I will use them.
Yeah.
I own lemon juice. I can use it. I have lemon cordial. Mm. I can use it. I have all kind of alcohol.
The best limoncello I ever had, my mom has a Meyer lemon tree in her backyard, and too many lemons made limoncello delicious.
There you go. The reason for limoncello is you own too many lemons.
I got too many lemons.
Yeah, but I mean, at the bar,
we need those lemons.
Yeah, but in other words, like if you wanted a flavor profile of that was in the limoncello land, would you get limoncello, or do you just like make it out of the stuff that we own already?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Danny DeVito, by the way, Matilda, great movie.
Good movie.
I love that movie. Whatever happened to her? Did she ever act in anything else? Matilda, she was so good in that. What about Miss Honey? She ever act in anything else?
I don't think so.
What about The Trunchbull? Any of these people ever act in anything again other than Rhea Perlman and Danny DeVito?
We'll look it up and get back to you.
I mean, is there a movie? There are movies that are as good as Matilda, but is there a movie that's like better than Matilda?
Arguably, no.
I mean, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie. Mm-hmm. We
also,
quote,
Roald Dahl, best children's author of all time.
I hear he was kind of a rancid individual, maybe.
Yeah, probably, but his stories were great.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. But we quote Matilda the movie constantly, mm-hmm. constantly in the house. Moby what?
Bruce.
The whole movie, great. Anyway, I don't even know how we got on that. Oh, Danny DeVito. So he's welcome to come on. I respect limoncello as a product. I respect it as having a cultural history. It's just... I never mix with it at the bar. It's not the style. But if Danny DeVito's going to come on, I will tell him I love it. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. Thanks for your take, Dave.
Yeah, cool.
Hot take. That was a hot take.
I think
it was
a
room temperature take.
What exactly
is it? It
was
a pretty standard take.
Define for me hot take.
I think a hot take is like a quick, like it's quick. It's like reflexive. So it really probably wasn't a hot take.
No, a hot take is an unpopular opinion.
What?
But it's one that comes very soon after, like, news breaks.
Now, what is the sandwich a hot brown?
It's what?
Turkey, unrelated.
Gravy, open-faced.
It's like a Welsh cheese. Rare bit sandwich,
ooh,
right?
I love Welsh rare bit.
Me too.
It's good. I like a cheese
good
sauce.
Good sandwiches.
I like cheese sauce and toast. Mm-hmm. But and I like the word damn. I like the word toast point. Any of you out there ever wants to, like, see me go, ooh.
Oh, it's with toast points.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
Ooh, toast point. Because you never hear that anymore. Anyway.
I like that a lot more than toast soldier. Give me a point.
Soldier. Well, soldier is a different shape.
I know, but like I'm saying, I prefer a point.
People out there.
Better for dipping.
What is the soldier?
No, the point.
Oh, the point. Well,
I'd argue it's actually not. I just prefer it because point rather than soldier.
The thing is, like, you've just given yourself up, Kat, as a dainty
a dainty dipper.
You're a dainty dipper.
I am a dainty dipper.
Because
you don't like sauce?
Love sauce.
First of all,
then why are you a dainty dipper?
First of all, I know this has probably been gone through endless times, probably on this air and all other airs, but is anyone here against the flip dip?
No, that's just good technique. It's not a double dip, it's a flip dip.
All right, it's
the other side.
Everyone here is okay with flip dip?
Very much okay
with it. You bite one side, you flip it around, dip it again.
Okay, now let's say the host at the party you're at, they buy, as they will because they're bad people, a crappy tortilla chip that's too freaking thin. Some people like thin tortilla chips. They're wrong, right? But it's usually all you can buy.
Yeah.
And you go to dip it, and the sucker cracks off into the... What's the etiquette? I like to try to retrieve it with another fresh chip.
That is the correct response.
Right. You're never allowed to go after it with your Jersey pincers. No offense, Jersey. I lived there for many years.
It depends on how much is, like, sticking out of the sauce. Like, if you can, like, get it easily.
No, you have to excavate no matter what.
There you go.
Really?
Yes.
I guess I'm a dainty dipper, and I'm very rude at parties.
This is why, if you buy low-quality chips, I'm looking at you, everyone. It's also good. I know nobody... Look, someone is going to sit there and eat those freaking carrots. So just have some of those carrots there because they make fantastic excavation tools.
Yeah.
Like
celery even better.
What?
Celery even better.
Celery even better. But I never, the amount of times I'll walk up to like a dipping situation, see that bowl of carrots and be like, you know what? I'm going to eat one of them carrots. That happens a lot. I walk up and there's like a thing of celery. I'm like, hey, you got blue cheese? No, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You know what I mean?
It's like, and maybe just put a spoon in the dip, a small spoon.
Hey, do you know anyone that peels the back of their celery before they put it on their crudité plate?
No.
They should. Hello? Who likes to look at someone talking with that string sticking out of their freaking mouth? Look, I haven't had to have a date in like 20, whatever, 5 years, 26 years, whatever, since 1990, like, one, right? But, like, I mean, how unsexy is that to be talking to someone and have a celery string sticking out of your freaking face?
Listen, if you, first dates, you got to just go for it with food. Because if I can't eat, like, a whole mackerel or, like, you know, some weird dry-aged meat or some strange raw animal out of the ocean, then it's never going to work.
So someone walks up to Jack and is like, hey, where do you want to go on your first date? He's like, ribs.
All in.
No, it's like, if you're not interested in going to K-Town and eating lots of small, fermented, cured little bites of things, then, you know.
End it early?
Yeah. It's just like, it's not going to work.
No, but here's the problem with that, right? It's like, I think you'd be better served saying beforehand, like, we're going to go on this date, but I'm going to take you here for this reason. And if you have a problem with that, let's not even go on this dinner date because what the hell?
I still enjoy conversation.
Really? With someone who's not eating the food across from you?
I will eat the food.
I don't like that. I don't like that. If I'm with someone and they're like... Yeah.
But that's what he's saying. He's like,
no but like, I can also be a human.
Yeah.
You know.
I know we're late, but listen to this. So I think I mentioned last week that Booker decided he's not going to eat like pork and freaking beef anymore. But Dax...
What has he done? Why?
I don't know. But Dax is like, it's not fair! He doesn't talk like that, but kind of. It's not fair! He's like, Booker can change the way the whole freaking family eats! And so yesterday, I'm like, Dax, man, like, it's going to be the same as burgers, but I didn't fry it because I don't have the freaking time. I was just like, sautéed chicken thighs. You know, they're good.
Yeah.
It's a good sandwich.
Yeah.
He cursed a blue streak into my ear about how unfair it was. I was like, Dax, a chicken sandwich is delicious. He's like, but I want a burger. I want a burger. And I was like, Dax, what the hell, man?
You did just say out loud, it's the same as burgers.
No, well,
which is fundamentally
No.
Say chicken sandwiches are for dinner.
Good snack.
Yeah.
What I meant was I'm going to, other than the patty, I'm going to give you all of the same fixings. So for Dax, he will still have bacon. There will be cheese. There will be tomatoes and lettuce and buns. So in other words, all I'm doing is... And then Dax had the freaking stones. Get this, people. He said to me, Dad, and I don't know how the hell this got into my freezer, but he said, Dad, there are turkey burgers in the freezer, and Booker can have one of those, and I'll have a hamburger. And I was like, I will not cook a turkey burger in my house, right? They are the biggest enemies of quality, perhaps in the world, second only to pre-made freaking salmon burgers. I will not cook a salmon burger in my house. Now, why? Because they are terrible.
Yeah, it's a garbage product.
If you were to low temp a turkey burger and then sear it off, maybe you could make a good turkey burger. But turkey is too low in fat anyway, especially the garbage breast meat and stuff that they grind up with no fat in it. And nobody wants a pink inside in their freaking turkey burger, so they all hockey puck those suckers, and they're the worst, driest, crappiest textured nightmares of a freaking sandwich on the earth. I will not allow it into my house. I don't know who bought it or why it's in my freezer. Ditto on salmon, and salmon has the even worse property that if some other idiot makes it for you, they ground it a billion years ago and it is oxidized until the end of the earth has come. So you're eating an overcooked, dry, probably improperly spiced, crappy, oxidized, rancid, dry salmon burger. Now, if you're going to chop your own salmon real fresh, make it into a patty, not put some... they also bind it with, like, god-awful amounts of breadcrumb and eggs and stuff. It's just... It's bad. Seafood sausage, good. Made with salmon, emulsified seafood sausage with a mousse. Quenelles. If you want to make a salmon quenelle, poach that mother off and put it on a bun, you have just won the Salmon Burger Olympics. But
how do you feel about a crab cake on a bun?
I'm sure that would taste good. It's not a burger because it's real bready.
Don't
get mad at me. I know that I don't care how good you are at making crab cakes. You put some freaking filler in those cakes.
Yeah.
It's not going to stay together.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to go. But Dave, can you give us an update on the turkey burgers next week?
Well, I'm going to go home and throw them out.
The update is they're in the trash.
I mean, I feel bad throwing them out, and I'm sure that someone at my house at some point will cook them, but it makes me cry that is in my house, that my family's money has gone to support the idea that turkey burgers are a valid thing to do when, by the way, you can just buy chicken or turkey thighs and make a delicious sandwich with them. And nobody feels with a whole thigh piece, right? You can cook it and still maintain a nice texture, but it's just a true fact that everyone will force you to viciously overcook any sort of ground poultry. It's just God's truth. They're gonna make you do it, and then they will sit there and they will spray an entire bottle of what?
Heinz
ketchup on it, right? To try to make it be okay, and they will say but it's good. I like it. And then you have the problem of not only knowing that the person across from you is eating something terrible that you've cooked. So you've cooked something you know is bad and they're eating it. But then they smack you in the face by saying that the product of you, your genetic lineage, has such a low understanding of food that they think that what they're eating is good. So you get smacked in the face two times.
Whew. Biggest mistake people make. Whew. Thinking something is good because they like it.
True. If someone says, I like this, but it's garbage, I'm like, you know what? Fair.
That is a wonderful opinion.
You can't argue with that.
Can't argue with it.
Can't.
This is trash. I like it.
Yeah. Then, you know, like my man Jack, he likes sweetened rumps. I'm not going to get into it. He's going to punch me in the face afterwards.
Man.
Anyway, this has been the extended version of Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.